You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsom.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed Podcast. It's another big week this week. We are speaking with Jenny Hughes, who is the Education Coordinator for the Royal Agricultural Society of New South Wales Agricultural Program. I can tell you, Jenny has a true passion for farming and education, really so. She was trained as a primary school teacher and she grew up on a farm near Mandurran in the central west of New South Wales. And she loves her work teaching kids about the agricultural world and how it relates to city kids. And tell you what, it's just a little bit different because this time we're in the heart of a live event. We've got all these kids around us, there's education stuff happening everywhere, and we've got animals as well, which means it's a little bit noisy. But Jenny certainly takes us through why this Primary Preview Day is so important for kids and how it relates to city kids and regional areas as well. I hope you enjoy. I certainly did too.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
All right, hi Jenny, this is good fun.
It is really good fun. We're here today at the Primary School Preview Day for the Sydney Royal Easter Show. It's our third annual time that we've done it, and it just goes from strength to strength, Ben. It's great.
Yeah, tell me about it. We've got a whole bunch of kids here coming past me with red uniforms. We've got blue uniforms. We've got white uniforms behind me. There's hundreds and hundreds of kids here.
Yes, so it's just under 1,000 kids here, and it's mainly Stage 2 and Stage 3 in primary school. And we really focus on the science and technology part of the curriculum and make sure that they're really doing some hands-on learning activities through the day.
Well, this is a hit deal, because the reality is everyone here's paddock to plate and all the rest, but fundamentally, it's actually directly related to my family. Most of my family come from the rural areas. They run farms and different ways of graziers and all sorts of people. And I love that you're putting science and tech in it, because it's really not just going, hey, we got a sheep, now we'll go sell it. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, no, look, 100%. And I'm a farm girl. And it really is that experience of me growing up on a farm that I've tried to have happen in the food farm. So everything from climbing on a cattle crush to, like, picking up sacks of grain to, you know, helping out in the shearing shed, you know, milking the cow of a morning. They're all the experiences I grew up with. And I know a lot of city kids just don't get that here. So, you know, it's great to be able to show them this sort of stuff.
And there's some really deep science when it comes to how soil science works, the hydrology of the area and everything else. I mean, people do full degrees for a good reason for the year.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And look, we're really lucky here because we get experts in from all over the place, from University of New England through to physics education, who certainly do a lot of stuff with science. We've got our sheep shearers from Belgeny Farm. We've got our dairy farmers from Camden in here. We've got just amazing people. But the real key is we've got a lot of young farming champions from the Archibald program. And that's really good because it's closer to the peer age, and kids learn so well from, you know, the closer they are in age, the more they pay attention.
And the people who have been to Sydney Royal Easter Show before know full well what the Archibald is like, but we know we've got people listening all over the globe about this. What is this Archibald and what's that all about?
That's a really good... So, yes, they're painted cows, pretty much. They're life-size painted cows, and a woman named Lynn Strong started this program probably nearly 10 years ago, and she's been developing it. And, look, she gets schools involved in the program. They get a blank canvas cow with nothing on it, but they pair that cow up with an industry and a young farming champion. That young farming champion goes into the school, mentors the kids, and then is available on email the whole time through the program. And then all their learnings, they then show on the cow, but it's not actually just the cow, it's a bigger program that. They've also got blogs and YouTubes and... So there's a whole heap of learning right across the curriculum for that program.
And it's definitely an artistic installation they can use at their school and bring to here. But also, I mean, the tech 100% there. I've seen some robotic influences and all sorts of things. I mean, it's not just painting. They 100% steam it up properly.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, like, it's the schools that really get involved with it across the curriculum are the ones that are really benefiting because, as you say, like, sure, that, you know, you can paint a cow, but to make it robotic is another world altogether. You haven't seen yet a couple of them in there. There's the Lego cow this year.
I haven't seen that one. Not yet.
You know, like, and there's, you know, the big craze on the resurgence of Lego, you know, so there's always, you know, something very topical in amongst them as well. So it's real fun to see the new ones every year.
So this started 3 years ago with the primary preview day. I mean, what sparked that?
It sparked it. We have incredible attendance with schools coming to the Easter show. We've had a very long history with the schools program. But I suppose I'm primary school trained, and we had under 10% of the audience that were coming in were primary school. And look, I wouldn't have brought it myself, to be true. Like, you know, you would have had, Miss, where's the show? Why can't we have a show? Why can't we go on a ride? So what we did was we actually created a space that's safe, secure, without any of that. So today doesn't have any rides. It doesn't have the showbags. It doesn't have the food stalls. The kids come like a normal excursion with their backpack, their food, and just experience the education that the Royal Agricultural Society can offer.
It is. And when you actually look at the hall, I mean, it's in the Big Wars food farm there. It's filled with stuff to do. What are the sort of things they get to do inside? I mean, it's not just looking at the brochures. There's lots of stuff to do.
Well, I think we probably should take a walk through, Ben.
Yeah, why not? We'll just go for a walk.
Let's do that.
Why not? It's a bit of a stroll. So, I mean, insert walking music. I don't know what walking music's like.
So outside, we start off the day, we did have the sheep shearing across the back behind us. You can't quite obviously see it, but we have Patter Pig, so in the pig pavilion. But walking now into the food farm.
And it's going to be loud because of it.
It is. We have Australian Egg sponsors the Get Kids Cooking program. So they actually get to cook with eggs. They learn how to crack eggs properly. And that happens right through show. So up to 3,000 kids get to do a free cooking session through show. Today they probably do, I don't know, 10 sessions, I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, 30 kids a session, just amazing.
That's really cool because they've got document cameras hanging straight over the top of their kitchen, and they've got fully fledged setup on white tables with kids to actually do it themselves. Actually, there's a fair bit of science about protein denaturation and all that sort of thing to be able to cook an egg properly.
100%, and they really do. It's not just a fun thing. Their narrative as they're cooking actually brings all that out.
Actually, I'm staring at a couple of primary students there. They're kind of, it's almost tapping away at the fence, like he's really keen to get in there.
It's like, bring it on.
So what else we got in here?
As we move around, there's Oz Harvester in here with us. They are doing the Journey of the Wonky Carrot.
What's that about?
Well, there's a lot, and supermarkets are becoming quite aware of it, that and food waste, that we're selecting food that is always top quality and not realising that the wonky carrot has just the same amount of vitamins and proteins and minerals and everything else. It's had all the care and love from the farmer. It's just a bit crooked.
And you're going to dice it anyway and throw it in the soup or whatever it is you're going to do.
Correct. So, you know, we've got to really, you know, look at our food waste and see how we can, you know, curb that by actually using all our fruit and vegetables.
Well, absolutely. When we look at food and fibre, I mean, there's 100% a sustainability thing going right through it. They're like really young kids all the way to the old ones, absolutely.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Oh, I love it. What else we got here?
So we also have an activity we created called Shop to Table. And that really is, today we've got it a lot more educational and a bit of a challenge for the older kids. But through show, it's more for the younger kids to actually just experience and learn through that fun and play. So they get to go to the market and choose their not-so-real fruit and vegetables. They've got little cash registers, some play money, some little cooktops. So they can go right from choosing at the market, shopping it with their little proper shopping bags, cooking it on their little toy ovens, and then the parents can be sitting down relaxing.
Yep.
And they can serve it to them.
And the thing is, like, these are primary students, and there's mathematics outcomes all over the place here for sure.
Oh, 100%. So, and this is, as I say, through show, really designed for the tiny tots. But we do this kind of activity year-round, and that's where we do bring in the weights and the value of the food, and we will give them a budget, we'll give them play money,
yep,
and a recipe and a challenge. Like, you've got to create, you know, 3-course meal for 4 families.
Yeah.
Family of 4, I should say. and they go to it. And it's amazing the creations they come up with.
Absolutely. And if you can't make your way down to the show here, I bet you could easily emulate this in your own classroom by getting some bits and pieces from the local reject store or whatever you've got. And maybe you could challenge the kids to go, let's create a nutrition program for an elite athlete, for example. And then you've got to totally show up differently.
100%. And look, I know there are programs and kits out there that create your own party.
Yeah, cool.
You know, like that really does excite them because they're all going to have a party at some stage throughout the year.
Yeah.
So it makes it very real for them, which is really important. Like people are really doing something.
Now, as an Australian, I can't help myself. I really have always loved the pie making spot where the kids can actually see how how pies actually get baked for real, and then you get to eat them.
So let me tell you what Ben is actually smelling here.
Yeah, I haven't had my lunch, by the way. What is it currently? Yeah, I should have had it.
So we actually get, there's a Perspex window into a fully operational bakery. We get to see them make the dough, roll it out, scoop the filling into the pie, put it in the ovens, and then you can actually buy it at the other end.
Yeah, here's the thing, and I don't know if you've ever listened before, but years ago I did work experience in year 11 at Defiance Milling Flour. And for a week, I had to test flour for its colour, its pH, mix it up into a simple dough and see what the stretch is like. I mean, you can actually have batches of flour for pizza flour, for specific, like, they'll actually get it really bespoke flours made for
100%.
Their...
100%. So there's Durum wheat, which is Australian wheat, produced a lot of our pasta and comes from South Australia, a lot of it. I grew up on a wheat and sheep farm. So it's all about the moisture and the protein content in each grain that they test to see where it ends up.
And the thing is that these grains coming through, I mean, they've now got to be more drought tolerant. Also, like you said, with the proteins and bits, I mean, they've got to be able to serve a population that needs these things.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I'm growing wheatgrass out the back of my office here at the moment. It's a very challenging experience, only because it needs watering about three times a day. And
oh, really?
I have to keep setting an alarm to remind myself.
I know, I have to set up like a drip irrigation thing or something.
But the easiest thing for a classroom to do is to grow some wheatgrass.
Yeah.
It's quite easy to source some wheat from any stocking station or, you know, country supply sort of place.
Yep.
I believe they sell it in health food shops now as well.
Oh, it's a big thing, especially even like in those fruit juices places that they'll put it through.
Yeah. It's in under a week. You have as much wheatgrass as you could, kids that could grow it.
And you could do fair testing too. You could totally wreck the soil on one and make it interesting on the other, or you could play with the light and dark. You could totally do that.
Well, and the interesting thing to do wheatgrass, you don't even need soil.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's where it starts challenging them. Mm. You know, particularly if you're doing that hypothesis to start off with, you know, estimating what's going to happen, the kids are going to be thinking that the grass isn't going to grow without the soil.
Yeah.
So it can really blow their minds a bit when you go, oh, actually, the stuff without the soil grew faster. Why is that?
And you get to look at the plant structure as well.
Yeah, well, indeed.
That's cool. So what else we got here? We've got Catch of the Day.
Yes, so Department of Primary Industries come around and have been working with us for many years now. And they have got the most bespoke, amazing program together with the Fish on Show. They go right through from the best catch, the best practices, where to fish, how to fish, and some of those really topical issues around fisheries at the moment. So they're just amazing.
Fisheries management is a mission. I remember doing it in the last year of uni. I'm a biology graduate, and trying to get your head around trying to estimate fish populations and therefore how much can you take out of the greater population before you destroy the group of fish that you're trying to work with as a stock is a challenge even to this day.
Yeah, 100%. And I can't wait to actually go through the whole experience myself. It's actually now chockers with kids and has been all day, so I haven't been able to get a look in. But I know that you can actually go fishing in here, catch something and then learn about the fish you caught.
Oh, excellent.
Which is kind of fun.
And there's a difference between Australian native fish versus ones that, mind you, these are more the marine ones I think we're looking at as opposed to aquatic. But that's actually something that students don't often realise, that there are some things that are in our waterways, our natural waterways, which whilst can be nice to eat, also present a challenge in terms of the ecosystem as well. So it's often about balance when it comes down to it.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%.
Cool, so we got wool here.
We do. Wool is such an amazing thing. We have that, you know, Australia was born off the back of a sheep's wool, and it's never truer. The Australian wool clip is some of the better wool grown and produced across the globe. The fine quality merino fibres, they are mainly processed still offshore, but they then come back to us. And what is amazing to see now is that we can actually track provenance, though.
I was thinking about hereditary, for sure.
Yes, so we can see what farm that animal was born and bred on, even though it's gone over for offshore processing, but it comes back and it can still be identified and tagged to know where it's come from.
And I wouldn't be surprised if someone wanted to do the full genetics of this. They could almost track it back to the Spanish farms that the merinos came from in the first place.
Yes, they would. They would. So, and really, Ben, that's the whole thing, and that's why the Royal Agricultural Society, that is in 3 years' time, 200 years old, why it survives today. Because what it is about is surviving and nurturing the genetics of the best animals.
Yeah.
So when you look around and see the animals on show, you are looking at the best bloodlines there are in the country.
Which is actually really good for kids to realise that the show isn't just about, hey, look at our animals. This is actually a thriving business community, and breed stock are important.
Oh, 100%. So it started really because when the British first came out here, nothing was working for them. You know,
yes.
It was like, the seasons were different, our soils were different, the animals were different, the natives' grasses didn't agree with the animals they brought out, all that kind of stuff. And if you look back, I love the stats when you look at the amount of animals that arrived with the first fleet to the amount of animals here now. Just mind-blowing.
Absolutely. I mean, those, there were very few animals on there. And I mean, and it wasn't exactly a monoculture, though, because you had ones brought in to be able to, you know, feed up the stock. And obviously, if you're dealing with cattle, for example, the drought masters are a lot different to the Herefords and whatnot, and they suit certain purposes.
Oh, 100%. So growing up, I'd never even heard or seen a Brahman bull that are very much more for northern climates. They don't get sunburned, and they're heat resistant. They can survive on a much drier climate or a wetter climate, whereas the Herefords and those really beefed up animals really need that more fertile soil to.
And the tough thing with this is that also, like, you might be managing a paddock, like a large station, for example, where you might have completely different weed species, completely different fauna species that are just wreaking havoc on your place, and need to look after it within a budget as well. So it's almost like science and economics unite.
Oh, it's fabulous to go out to a property and see the soil management. That is where it all starts. Without the soil and the sun, we don't eat.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's often a misconception that I've come across, even just going from school to school, talking around geology, is that often, and it depends on what areas we're talking, whereby someone will say, oh, the farmers may just, you know, they just want to wreck this, you know, get as much out of the soil as possible to sell the next crop, and they'll buy on new fertiliser and whatnot. But the thing is, they understand what a friable soil is, and if they destroy their soil, they effectively destroy their livelihood for generations to come. So they really need to be more, I suppose, architects of their own future, really. They want to destroy it because they've got to look after it and live off it.
Look, so much. And look, you know, I'm not young. I certainly grew up where chemicals were a thing that we used to freely spray. We just weren't educated on what we were really doing to the soil. The farmers of Australia today really are very, very, very wised up to the chemicals that they're putting on to anything. And most of them actually don't even spray for a lot of their weeds now. It's natural.
Absolutely, and actually saves them money too, because this stuff isn't cheap. And also, the last thing you need to do is, if you're on a sandy soil, for example, spraying something and it's going to move through your soil, you don't need that.
No, you really don't. You really don't.
So what are we looking at here?
So we're now just walking into the farmyard nursery. And in the breezeway we're here, we have Luke and Jess. They're some dairy farmers from Camden. Jess at the moment is showing the students what happens to the milk after it comes out of the cow. So she has an old-fashioned, I'll get the word
butter
in a second.
Churn.
A butter churn. No, it's not a butter churn.
No, it's not a butter churn. What is that?
No, it's a separator, milk separator. So with her hand turning a handle at the moment on this old milk separator, it's using centrifugal motion to move the milk around. What happens, it separates it and it creates curds and whey.
Ah.
Yes, so out of the curds and whey, the curds is then used to make a soft cheese,
and then the whey is used to make your skim milks.
Yeah, is it actually, I challenge you if you're listening on here, if you've got some students, I don't care how old they are, just get them to give them a definition of what homogenised means.
Oh, is this, are you challenging me here?
No, I'm more just challenging the kids, because often they don't realise, they see these words like homogenised or pasteurised, and what does that mean? But like homogenised literally means, if you've ever seen a milk come out of a cow, if you sit there for a while, I mean, funnily enough, the cream rises to the top. Homogenised is almost like beating the milk up.
Yes, that's right.
It just gets the fat all the way through
that's
it.
That's right.
And, I haven't seen this particular device, actually. I mean, it looks quite old, actually, look at it.
Oh, well, they are very ancient. So what she's doing first up now, what you can see is you can't see the other spout. You'd be seeing the skim milk coming off the other side, and you're seeing the cream coming off the top. Mm. So she's just pouring some more in now because she hasn't got enough in there, obviously, for it to be coming out.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, centrifuges, I mean, often people think of centrifuges as something that you might find in a laboratory where they spin blood, or they might think of it as a gravitron where a kid gets in it and then spins around fast. But, I mean, this has been used for, you know, for over a century just to, you know, split up the milk to be used as products.
Yes. And, look, in 5-10 minutes using that hot plate, Jess can create a soft cheese.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing.
I hope she gets to eat it.
Look, it's not a bespoke product. It's,
no.
it's the crudest, rawest way of making it, with no flavour or any...
No salt, no nothing.
No, nothing added to it. So, you know, really for what we're eating, we would probably be putting a few additives in for our palates these days.
True. And actually, if you want, you could probably make your own butter simply just getting a container and a usually like a marble, something that won't wreck your container, that you basically just put cream in there and beat it up with a bit of salt. You'd be surprised how close it gets to butter.
Oh, it's not how close, it is butter. So this is an activity that they will do, and in a classroom, it's the funnest activity. So exactly as Ben said, you just get that little sealed container with the milk and and yes, marbles is spot on. And seriously, within 5 minutes, the kids, and it's like you just pass it around and the kids keep shaking until those balls stop moving, and there's the butter.
And if you're feeling a bit mean, you could use skim milk versus full cream milk and just see which one takes longer.
That is true. And then just to the other side, you can see Jersey cow. So Jersey cow is a dairy breed. Dairy is very different to a beef breed. They're completely... the bone structure is... people see a dairy cow and think they need a good feed.
Yeah.
But they are bred purely for their energy to go into milk production.
Now, I was lucky enough to visit a dairy farm in Bomaderry. So if you don't know where Bomaderry is, it's down sort of just south of Sydney, a couple of hours south of Sydney, and they had robotic milkers. And that's a whole nother level. I mean, as the cows come through, they've got tags, so they know exactly which cow came through. They know... they analyse the milk, making sure that she's not sick, that the milk's producing great stuff that's actually able to use. They make sure that they're checking their vital signs. It's actually quite an interesting process of how far the world has moved on since the days of sitting on a stool and milking away.
Yeah, it really is. I'm going to put Luke on the spot here. So Luke is our dairy farmer that comes out from Camden Way, and he works with us a lot with all our programs. We have farm days where we bring kids into the nursery throughout the year, so it's not just Easter show we do stuff, and Luke will bring these cows in to us and let the kids hand milk. So what do they learn when they're hand milking, Luke?
Oh, there's a whole heap of things. Even first thing, the milk comes from a cow. A lot of kids associate milk coming from a supermarket in the bottle, and they don't think of it coming from a farm before that. Things like when the milk comes out, it's warm, and the different things we need to do to the milk to get it ready for them to consume it. Some kids think that milk comes straight out of the cow and we can drink it straight away. They don't realise it has to be processed beforehand. And then others, like I had a kid here this morning that thought we added sugar to the milk and all these bits and pieces.
Too many milk checks for that kid.
Yeah, that's it, exactly. So it's interesting to see the backgrounds to where what the kids perceive before they arrive and then what they've learnt once they've been here.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you've got... So what sort of cow we've got in front of you right now?
She's a Jersey cow. This is Spook and she's 5 years old.
So what sort of production, you work with these every day. I mean, what sort of production would Spook have on a daily basis?
We're sitting at around about 22 litres a day. So it's about 5,500 litres per cow every year.
Which means it's quite an energy-intensive process to be able to have, like, to know how many cows you can put in the paddock before you overrun it.
Completely. And every year that changes depending on the season. But even things like people see a dairy cow and say, oh, she's so skinny. And then you start explaining to them the amount of energy it requires to produce a litre of milk and how much energy we need to put into that cow to one, for her maintenance and then production on top of that. And they realise that these cows are like athletes.
Yeah, they are.
And they're the whole time they're working.
And so are you every single day trying to make that happen too.
We're going to have to move on because Luke is now doing a session.
All right, enjoy. Yeah, he really does. We better get on. Enjoy, mate. Take it easy.
Yeah. We're going to walk into the nursery now and have a look at the animals in here. Oh, actually, behind us, we do have a working dairy.
Yeah, let's have a look.
So, and I suppose that's one of the things you can really see where we've come to with technology to do something as basic as milking. So whilst we were just talking to Luke with the hand milking, obviously he doesn't hand milk his cows every day. He does have machinery to help him do it. And here we have a permanent working dairy that we do only really fire up for show or some special events we do.
And the thing is, I'm just thinking here, and correct me if I'm wrong, because, hey, I've been in the city for too long, so just correct me if I'm wrong. But, I mean, yeah, it's not just for show. I mean, you've got prize cows here. And if they're not being milked every day, they get sick.
100%. So second week of show is dairy week. And the cows do have to get milked twice a day. Otherwise, yes, they end up with mastitis
and
a lot of different things. So it's 100%. They need to be milked. The farmers, before they are showing their cattle, do want to have them have a very full udder. So by the time they're coming in to get milked, they are ready. Very, very happy. And they walk in quite happily. There's no forcing. They're very happy to be milked.
Well, that's the thing too, because, I mean, it's almost Pavlovian. They know it's not their first day. They know what it's like to come on in. And the thing is, of course, I mean, it's a product that is used globally and we need it.
Yes, it's surprising where we actually use dairy products. And I suppose there are a lot of people that are dairy intolerant these days, and they would be the first to testify how many products actually use byproducts of milk.
Well, even just thinking, I know there's a protein called casein where they can actually effectively make a biopolymer out of milk, which is cool. I mean, you can use a lot of these agricultural things to make interesting stuff that we used to use with petroleum.
Yeah, look, 100%. And I love the whole concept of the house that Ag built.
Yep.
It's a concept that really makes you start thinking about everything that we do produce. There is pretty much, whenever you get out of bed, you've got agriculture within 5 metres of you, wherever you are. When at any time of day.
Now, if you're someone who listens to sound, you'll notice that the sound suddenly quietened, deadened down. We're still surrounded by students, but there's a lot of soft fall underneath my feet. Let's just describe where we're at.
So we've just entered into the open petting plan part of the farmyard nursery. It's quite a unique experience where you're in the pen, so you can actually interact with the animal.
My kids love this, by the way.
It is a very, very popular part of the show and one that we love to be able to bring to the show every year. It's 500,000 people come through here over the 2 weeks to get this very unique experience. The kids can grab a brush and, you know, give them a bit of a brush and brush their fur. They can get a feed cup and give them a bit of feed. But it really is just their amazement of seeing these animals around them rather than in a pen, which, you know, we have to do, obviously, here for their safety and for the children's safety for some animals. So that's the only reason, obviously, that, you know, so if we look around us, we've got some baby piglets, we've got some an alpaca, we've got a llama, we've got a couple of deer, we've got a dairy cow in here as well, we've got a couple of donkeys. Down the back we have a couple of deer.
What's going on in the centre here?
The centre is our duck pond. Its show officially opens tomorrow and we've actually just put a new duck board pond base on it for the ducks to be moved across from here and into there ready for show tomorrow. We probably want to walk over and have a look at the ducklings and the what might be in the incubators, do you think?
What do you mean? I'd love to see what's coming up, because I think we might... No, this is from problem with podcasting is it's an audio medium. I wish we had the visual with as well. Maybe we need to vodcast this next year.
Yeah, maybe, maybe.
All right, so we're working over to the incubators, and I know that a lot of schools get a lot of incubators for their own classrooms, but being able to see this for kids who don't get that opportunity is really unique and special to them.
Oh, 100%. It's there is nothing quite as special as watching a baby chick use its little milk tooth to crack open that shell and then come out of that shell. Just unique.
Absolutely, and in the middle of it is they're monitoring the temperature, and so if you're data inclined, I suppose you could graph that temperature. It's fairly constant because it needs to be.
100%. So there's lots of ways the RAS interacts with school children, and one of them is the meat bird pairs or the egg laying competition.
Ah.
So schools can either raise their own meat bird pairs or raise their own hens to lay eggs and then put them in to be judged against other schools. And that's where they really start to look at what you need to do to raise the best product.
I was actually lucky at my secondary school I went through, they had a proper agricultural faculty whereby they had numerous Hereford cows. They were running a whole bunch of chickens, the whole thing, and more importantly they did it from a show point of view, so they actually had to make sure these things were ready to be show quality, which takes effort.
Yes, and time. It's so with all these things, we don't just go and herd up a mob of sheep and a couple of goats off any farm. The animals here are hand fed, hand raised, and around children all their lives.
Well, this place, I mean, think of like a giant warehouse is the best way I could describe what this sort of this looks like. And I know that when the show is truly on, it's really absolutely packed. But at the same point, you've got animals where they've got places where they can retreat from because it gets a bit much for them otherwise.
Yes, we have rest pens so that the animals, if they're ready for a rest, they 100% can duck in underneath a pen and get that rest, unlike myself.
So if you've been listening on in and you're in the New South Wales district or if you're in Sydney Metro, obviously you'd love, you know, if you have never been down, undoubtedly it's probably worth a shot coming on down. I reckon there's a fair bit to learn. How would they be able to get in touch with you or your team to be able to make that happen?
Oh, look, you can buy tickets online. That's the easiest thing ever. All transport, Sydney public transport, is included in the ticket price. So the only way to come to the show is by public transport. It's the easiest option. Trains come directly to Sydney Olympic Park. Buses come straight here. It's the thing I would say about the show, though, is it's not about the show bags. It's not about the rides. Sure, they're here. But if you can come and do the animal walk when you first arrive and walk through and stop and have a yarn to the farmers that are in every other shed, bribe your kids if you have to. I know as a parent, and I don't say that because as a parent, I bribe my kids. It's like you can get this show bag after we've had a good couple of hours doing this. And they learnt that lesson and they now love the countryside. They love going out doing things in the countryside. Mm. It blows me away every year that there's something new that I'd never imagined would be here.
Yeah.
This year we have an amazing Clydesdale horse old wheelwright doing some amazing work.
That's a real dying art. I hope not completely dying because those people are incredibly skilled.
They really are. There are very few of them left in Australia that can actually create these old wheels. There's an amazing dinosaur display.
Oh, cool.
All moving and unbelievable. But we really are about making this show more aggy, more agrified, to really, you know, it's that whole bring the country to the city. It's making them familiar with country people and no different to city people. They just come from a different place.
And that's the whole point of understanding how people's cultures are. There is a regional culture, there is a metropolitan culture, even if we are in the same state.
Yes. The Great Dividing Range is quite unique in Australia in the sense that the most of our population lives along the seaboard, and the Dividing Range is really a physical divider between the country. If you go to the States, for argument's sake, you're 5 seconds out of town and you're in amongst a corn crop, for argument's sake.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're very familiar with that, the country agricultural scene, because it's right around them. Whereas that's not the case in most of Australia.
Yeah, and the distances are broad. You're right. And then that is the case. But that, if you're not sure about what the Great Dividing Range is, just check out Australia's map. It's a seriously big mountain range running down the eastern side. It's a proper one. And I'm actually just thinking of... So there's this podcast, and quite thankfully, and hi to everyone who still listens in. Thanks very much for listening in. It is global, and there'll be people who may not have this opportunity to be able to go to a show like this, or they just can't, for some reason, get... ag and in some ways happening to the level that you guys are doing. How could someone who's trapped in a concrete box of a school, imagine it's like proper concrete, proper high-rise school, whereby they really want to teach agricultural science and they've got a little bit of a budget, not much, but what could they do as first steps to be able to introduce kids to what actually happens out in the farms?
Look, there's a couple of different ways you can go. You can always, even Luke that we were just talking to, they'll do a dial-a-farmer.
Oh, cool. I like that.
You can ring up and say g'day to Luke and Jess on their farm. And so, you know, you can go from that angle. Or you can, there are a couple of places where you can just get the product, like I was saying before, grow your own wheat.
Yeah.
You know, raise a couple of chooks in a chook pen and see how you go. Learn about what you have to do to keep a chook safe. You know, every environment has its own issues. Whether it be snakes or foxes or birds, you know, there are a lot of predators around for chooks. It's amazing how much you instantly learn by raising an animal.
Oh, absolutely. I actually got my kids doing that. They're looking after fish and they're looking after two plants which they constantly overwater.
Yes, I know, right? So, you know, if you start looking at technology, you can use Arduino and start looking at soil moisture.
Yeah.
And have a light go off to tell you when your children should be watering the plants so they stop overwatering it.
Yeah, I believe we should have some of those hanging around at work. I probably should actually use those. You're
right.
You
probably should.
Actually, and anyone who's really tech inclined, I mean, if you're looking for a resource and it's not there, you can create something that people can use. I suppose with virtual reality around this place, if you're near a farm and you know how to hook it up and set up on YouTube or whatever it is you're going to do so people can see it, you could create these experiences for people to be able to, well, see.
Yeah. And look, there are amazing resources online. Certainly the Royal Agricultural Society have them at RES, NSW.
.com.au. We'll put it in the show notes.
/, /education.
But if you type in Royal Agricultural Society New South Wales or RAS New South Wales,
education,
you'll find it.
Yeah. But look, I'll also put a shout out for the Primary Industry Education Foundation. So if you go to their website, Prime Zone, that's a catch-all for all industries' education publications. We certainly support them, and so do most industries that we work with. There is some amazing resources out there. Cotton industry, grow your own jeans.
Yeah.
You know, bring that on. It's really easy to grow cotton. It's really easy to pull the seed out of it and create your own little mini gin and create a product. It's unbelievable. You can weave it and create your own denim.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing to be able to do
it
that. It
really
cool.
is. It really is. But it's all just, you know, the old keyboard away.
Yes. Yeah, keyboard's useful, but not all, don't always need to. I mean, obviously, immersing yourself in the real thing is always going to be best.
Oh, look, 100%. And look, most people are very happy to welcome you onto a property. It's very hard to get into some because of biosecurity reasons, such as poultry or pig farms. But that is really because they're looking after the health, wealth and safety of their animals.
And effectively also to yourself too, because zoonosis, this idea that there are illnesses that can move between species, you want to look after yourself as well.
Look, I'm just sort of walking around and I just saw a lovely woman by the name of Amy Snowden walk past my radar. And I'm going to introduce you very quickly to her. We're just doing a bit of a podcast here, Amy, talking about general education and how you can immerse yourself in it. Amy is quite well known as the Lego Farmer or Little Brick Pastoral Company and has created her own little niche market where she photographs Lego characters into agriculture.
Oh, cool. What got you into that?
Quite simply, I saw Lego photography online. There are hundreds of Lego photographers around the world. But there was no farmer when I discovered it about 5 years ago. So I thought, why not? Let's literally just grab a character and take it out on farm.
Absolutely. And I know that Lego actually does this thing where they people submit to get creative and go, I wish you made the Ghostbusters set or whatever. And then you're doing it from an agricultural sense. That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Just taking a character and taking it out and showcasing what we do on farm.
Oh, that's cool. Now, it says you're with the RAS youth group. Have you been involved with that for long?
I have been on the youth group for now 2 years. This is my second year on the youth group, second show.
So what else, what does the youth group get up to, like, each year? Like, I mean, I actually haven't come across the youth group before. I mean, you'd know more than me.
They're doing a great thing this year called bringing youth to the show. So tell them a bit about that, Amy.
Yeah, All Roads to the Royal.
Oh, that's what it's called?
We've put out an application for a school that hasn't been able to come to Sydney Royal before. And they're coming for a behind-the-scenes tour for 3 days. So Cool Arts Central School won it this year, and they're coming up to the show next week and behind the scenes, coming and participating in the grand parade, coming in exploring a lot of the exhibits with us.
That's awesome.
Which is going to be awesome.
And there's going to be people in regional New South Wales who would love to get involved in that. How would they get to learn about that and submit for next year?
Yeah, so our application's sort of open hopefully by the end of the year or early in the new year. And then it's an application process. So tell us your story, tell us what makes your school special and why you'd love to come to Sydney.
So to answer your question as well, we have a newsletter we put out every quarter, and we'll always tell people that sort of opportunity that's up and coming. So we have a huge database that goes out with all this sort of information on it. But there's so many ways. We've also got Parramatta High coming to the school. They did a fundraiser for the Gilgandra schools. That was their sister school. Raised an enormous amount of money. And so we're now hosting Parramatta High as a thank you for doing such an amazing thing to a country school and a country cousin. And so they're now going to come out to the show on the RAS and once again be having a great experience behind the scenes and show them a few special things.
That's really cool. And thanks for jumping in on the spot. You didn't know you'd be on this, but there you go.
That's a, you know, isn't it? It's great. So there, one other thing probably down here is to talk about the deer right down the back. So okay. We don't often really think about deer when we think about farm animals. But deer are an amazing animal. I spent 4 years living in New Zealand and learned a fair bit about deer and, you know, the velvet on their antlers and all the other things that they do. But they are by far, for me, my favourite animal in here. I suppose it's just such a unique experience. And there are two that we're looking at, and I apologise that you can't see them, but this one that I'm pointing to, I held as a little doe.
Oh, that's cool.
So I'm very attached to him.
I bet. And the thing is, though, if you were running a deer farm and the infrastructure to be able to put that in place is a little more challenging because they can jump.
Yes, so 10-foot-high fences.
Yes. Seriously, we're not kidding here.
Yes, no, very much so.
Look, I think you guys are doing a fantastic job. And the fact that this has only been going for 3 years, I mean, you've always had, for 200 years, you've had connection with the community every year with the Royal Easter Show. But having this primary preview day really is an outstanding idea and clearly working because the number of uniforms coming through, I couldn't even identify how many different schools you've got here right now.
There's probably only about 12 different schools here, that, you know, quite a few of them have, two stage groups here.
Yep.
So it really isn't first in, best dressed. We don't pick and choose. If they're, you know, the first person that says, hey, we want to bring two stage groups, they're the ones that get in.
Well, there's your heads up. So if you want to come along, get in early, by the sound of that, because there are a lot of schools in this basin and this is a vibrant day.
Yes, and look, it's only $15 a head.
Yep.
You know, it's really is when you're looking at excursion and what you offer, this really is value for money for, you know, I know we're all pinching our pennies everywhere. The costs are crazy, but I think this really is value for money.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm going to leave you be as we stand next to the goats. And they are very cute and very calm and relaxed, by the way. But look, everyone have a fantastic time and we'll catch you another day.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
Well, there we go. We just heard from Jenny Hughes from the Rural Agriculture Society of New South Wales, and can tell you what, the RAS education program is extremely busy considering the big changes that happened to the curriculum in our state in food and fibre, that's curriculum outcomes. And you know what? They've been busy for years anyway, but I tell you, they are flat out. And look, if you want to get involved with the education programs, if you want to get your school in touch, just look up rasnsw.com.au/education, or just type in RAS New South Wales and type in education into your favourite search platform, and you'll find Jenny and the team there. So I hope you enjoyed it. A little bit different, this one, a little bit loud every now and then, but we got the main points across, that the kids for a primary preview day were having a blast and learning a lot in the process. So there's more coming up as usual. If you're loving the Physics Ed podcast, leave a review. Let us know what you've been thinking. It's always nice to know who's out there, because we know there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, because we get emails every now and then. But it'd be great if you could leave a review. It does help us out so that other people can discover this as well. But look, we've got more coming up. I hope you have a fantastic week. You've been listening to me, Ben Newsom from Phys Education, and you've been listening to the Phys Ed podcast. I'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
This podcast is part of the Australian Educators Online Network. AEON.net.au